Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Women Leading the Way Radio Show, where each time you'll hear from successful women CEOs, executives, and professionals, where we'll discover how they do what they do to be successful in business. We'll be interviewing women who have overcome big challenges, women who have incredible stories of lessons learned in dealing with adversity. We'll even interview women who have started and grown successful organizations and women who are C-level executives with unique talents and positions. Our goal is to bring successful businesswomen together to share how they're leading the way in business today.
Good morning and welcome to Women Leading the Way Radio, brought to you by Connected Women of Influence. I'm Deanna Potter, your petite powerhouse and host for Sassy Sales and Business Development. And with me today is our leading lady, Jen Hamilton, co-founder and CEO of Institute for Mastering Success. Good morning, Jen.
Good morning, Deanna. Thanks so much for having me.
Oh, thank you so much for being here today. Our topic today is happy staff means happy profits. And everybody who listens in knows that I am all about the profits, baby. Show me the money. I think that this is going to be such an exciting topic for us to talk about. And I know that studies clearly show that profitability is directly impacted by how engaged employees feel daily in the workplace. And I know that you are an expert on this. It's all about engagement, engagement, engagement. But what I find so interesting about you, Jen, is that your background began in accounting as a CPA. Which blows my mind. So will you please tell us about that and how it ties in today to the work that you do in the world of training and development?
Sure. It is pretty funny because often what we're dealing with is people skills. And I'm going to apologize to all the accountants for what I'm about to say, but we as CPAs are not really known for being great with people. We're known for being great with numbers. So it is something that makes people go, huh? So thank you for asking. What's interesting is that my background as a CPA is really living what it's like to be that more analytical number person and make a transformation into owning both sides of what is appropriate and get you to be even more successful as a professional. It's owning your craft, doing really good at whatever you're good at, whatever your natural skills are, but also knowing that this is a world of humans around you and it's critical to be able to work well with them and to enjoy your work and do your best by really honing your people skills, honing your professional skills. And I did it first out of necessity to be successful and to feel good about myself, because there was something missing in my career. And when I could really own my true nature of wanting to make a difference for people and helping people and bringing that people skill side into my technical CPA side, I was able to really live what we now teach.
I love that. I love that. And you know, it's funny because I had a tax business and I did taxes for almost 5 years. And during that period of time, and you mentioned the word necessity, I too, when I chose that business during that time frame, it was a necessity for myself and my family's time. And I remember I would tell people, oh, I have a tax business, and they would cock their head the way a dog does. Really? And I would go, well, yeah, I kind of don't fit that mold, do I? And I didn't do it very long because I just felt like a square peg trying to fit in a round hole. Because there is a certain, I think, you know, a certain type of person that usually does accounting and that type of thing. And I love my accounting peeps just like you do. I agree. I totally agree. But maybe, you know, not definitely wasn't for me for a long term. So I know that you spent several years working with the California Department of Education. And I know from my own experience with the public and private sectors, they're vastly different. Tell us, what did you, what you did there, and what were some of the learnings there that you kind of gained, and how are you applying them now today with the work that you're doing through the Institute? And maybe tell us a little bit about the Institute.
Absolutely. If I forget any of those wonderful questions, just remind me, but I'll start with explaining the Institute, because then I think it will give a context for how the CPA world and the education world sort of meshes together. So with the Institute, we really serve as an outsourced training department, and that we work with companies who aren't ready for a full training department, but they need access to it. The two functions we do are we do specific professional people skills, supervisory skill training, where we really are teaching staff and management to be motivated to do their work right, professionally, and work well with others. And then the second main function we do is really we provide improvement for on-the-job training and cross-training. So we start with the training and systems audit, and then we work with our clients to fix any problems we find. So that word audit is where that CPA came from. and of course, the training is where the California Department of Education came from. So when I was working, let me say, I left the CPA world because I had been volunteering so much of my life and loved teaching professional skills and tying that to academics. That's what I did as a volunteer. And after I left my accounting career, I decided to do this full time. And that's when I went to work for a nonprofit and had the contract with the Department of Education. What my main function was not only to teach high school students, college students, whatnot, some people skills, professional skills, and tie it to academics. I also taught teachers and after school providers and trainers of teachers how to use the same strategies to really bring in those kind of soft skills, project management skills, team building skills into the classroom so that it can be successful. And then, of course, all the while, the only way it could be successful with a tiny little budget, and of course, working with California Department of Ed when their budget got smaller and smaller and smaller, the only way I could pull off some of the incredible things they asked me to do, like a two-day conference with just half of my time when it normally takes 8 people to put on the conference they had done, I had to engage volunteers. And that's where I think the key is in where the public and private sector is different, yet I found the commonalities and how it applies to what we're doing with the Institute. Where people get really curious and interested is that I've had years and years of success of getting students who are forced to be in the classroom, engaged, productive, effective, working well together, as well as volunteers. I could get volunteers to do things better than paid staff. And that's when companies said, almost like you were saying, cocked their head like the dog, like curious.
Yeah.
How do
yeah.
you get people who aren't have to be there, aren't paid, whatnot? How do you get them to be effective? And so it's really the foundation of what worked for me, what we taught, and what was successful, and being able to bring that into the Institute. Teachers and managers have a very similar role. A manager or someone that's supervising has to get somebody else to learn what they need them to do and complete their assignments. And so it's really the same sort of techniques, because people are people. I don't care if you're in high school or you're about to retire. There are some basic same ways that we learn and process information. And if you know how to master that, you're going to get people to just rock it for you at work.
Wow. Very interesting, because common or ignorance, let's say ignorance, says, gosh, that it would be very different. And yet you found that common thread that works. Very, very interesting. So
yeah.
Why is it, do you think, that studies are showing us only 3 out of 10 Americans in the workforce today say they feel engaged at work?
It's actually something that has been historically happening in our country and the way we do business, and the research that I'm building this on, just to give credit, is out of Daniel Pink's book Drive. So that's really about motivation. So if you don't have that one, pick it up. We actually had so many people say, hey, did you create your company based on Drive? And I had so many people say that. I said, maybe I should read the darn thing. So what I love about Drive is it gives the history, the science, the research that today proves why do we have 30% engagement. And it started back with the Industrial Revolution. When you're on the assembly line, the way you're motivating your team is through carrots and sticks, as they say, or rewards and punishment. You do a good job, you get paid. You do a bad job, you get fired, kind of thing. Or you do a good job and you get a bonus. We still see this today. as our lead way of motivating our people. Unfortunately, it doesn't really honor the person and what they truly need. It only goes so far. There's actually myths, 7 myths that you can look in the book that basically say how it sabotages our people and our results in the long run. So because of that, if we're not really meeting the more what they call intrinsic or the deeper needs that we have as humans, the need to feel like we belong, that we're important, that we're learning something, that we're making a difference. If we're not addressing those needs that we can have some independence and freedom and autonomy and think for ourselves and be creative, if we don't address those needs, we're not going to get an engaged, productive group. And that is exactly why a volunteer is very effective if you use those same strategies. How are you making a difference? Giving them some creativity to do it. And it's a direct tie into the strategies that you can get people engaged. But if you're missing that, if you're just like clock in, pay you if you do a good job, punish you if you don't, you're missing the whole point on what really motivates people.
So you, in one of the answers earlier, said part of the objective that the Institute operates under is how to motivate individuals to do it right and professionally. So Do you use some of those things that you've just mentioned now as a foundation to achieve this goal?
Absolutely. It's a foundation that has me be able to get quite a bit of work done all throughout my career with using other people, essentially. And I don't mean using in a bad way, but utilizing their strengths, their talents, and their passions. And it's really actually pretty simple. The cool thing is I'm going to just let you in a little secret. It is exactly what millennials are asking for. They don't know how to say it that way, but it is exactly what they're asking for.
You know, it's interesting, and this gets back to, I think, some of the parts that you were just saying, whether they're a student or whether they're getting ready to retire, there's certain themes that apply to all people. And although you're saying that this is what the millennials are looking for, my husband's not listening to this, and I'm glad, but, you know, he's struggling right now in a situation with upper management, and this is exactly what a 42-year-old man that I'm living with in my own household right now is looking for from a boss who is very ill-skilled to be managing right now. I do agree with you. I think that this is a common human nature thing. Very interesting. Tell me, can you give us an idea, at what point does a business become, quote, big enough to begin to need the services that you guys offer?
Well, I like to say that business is wonderful until you throw people into it and they screw it all up.
So, I love that. Yeah.
So essentially, when that happens,
systems are always great. Products are always good until you throw people in and then we mess them all up.
So the better answer is it's right around usually 20 employees where it's just so many people messing it up or not knowing how to do it. Unless you have some of these things where it gets noticed to the point that it's not easy to sort of ignore, if you will, and work around it. And so that's kind of that magic spot. Huge companies spend a lot of money, time, have full-time teams dealing with this. So it doesn't really matter how many you have. This is an issue. We come into smaller companies who don't have the ability to have that full investment like a large company does and try to give them all of the same juicy wonderfulness that you would have if you had a full department without the full department price.
Gotcha. What are, I'm a manager or a business owner, let's say, what are some of the red flags or warning signs that I should be looking for in order to kind of indicate that I've got poor engagement in the workplace? Would it show up in the culture? Would it show up in a lack of production? What would it show up as?
The best answer is yes.
Okay.
You're going to see it in your results. You're going to see it in your culture. If you do a gut check, you're going to feel if somebody is checked out in some way, shape, or form. But if you also really listen for it from a culture point of view, you're going to listen and you'll hear the water cooler talk, if you will, the complaints, the ways that social media is more of a draw than their daily work. There's just some lack of check-in, and maybe they're barely sort of making it in terms of definitely need coffee and just sort of living that sloth-like life of just kind of doing what it takes to get by. That's sort of where you know you have someone who's disengaged, where you have someone that is totally disruptive. That's more where they're completely derailing your culture and your team and kind of rallying people around them to basically say, yeah, this is what's wrong with work. Then you've got a much more bigger problem and a bigger issue. So hopefully, I mean, that's definitely a red flag. But if you can catch the warning signs or they're just sort of checking out, you can ideally avoid those red flags. From a more results-oriented, if you're having customer complaints, some issues with customer retention, some issues with employee turnover, you hire people and they leave quite quickly, those are also signs that there's something not happening. There's also a statistic with Gallup, I think it's about 80% of managers or people who are responsible for supervising are not in the right position, and 70% of the reasons that people quit is because of their supervisor or their boss. So you can also, when you're doing exit interviews or whatnot, figure out if it is, in fact, who is supervising them or that's where their complaints are before they quit. And then, you know, it's time to start to deal with how your people are motivating, essentially, and managing their staff.
Okay, so that's very interesting to me, that point, because then my thoughts are, is it really an engagement issue or is it a leadership training issue? And what I mean by that is, is that a different skill set or a different training issue? You know, I can be great at motivating you, but if I don't have the ability to develop your skill set on how to perform your job, I mean, I can be a great cheerleader, but it doesn't mean I know how to do the function. Isn't mm-hmm. that a different training matter?
It is, and it can be related in terms of being able to know how to motivate people with engagement strategies. If you yourself don't have the skills to be a great people person or professional person, meet your deadlines, work well with clients, whatnot, you're likely passing that on, and it's similar to a parent passing on to their child some of their, you know, good habits or not, and then you see it with the grandchildren and then the great-grandchildren. And that's really what I believe has happened in America. You all could probably think of a good teacher or a good manager and a really bad one. And we try, without formal training, to mimic the good ones, the ones that we liked, and avoid what the bad ones did. But without formal training, we're really just flying by the seat of our pants with trial and error, seeing where we get in trouble for that didn't work, I'm going to try it differently, or I didn't like how that person did it, so I'm not going to do it like them. And so I do think it is a training issue, but it's also, if you're lucky enough to have good role models who can teach it, you can learn it, or you invest in some particular skills and training. And sometimes it's a co-collaboration. You may be a manager, but you don't know how to do people skills, so you want to work with someone who does. So mentoring programs, too, putting, you know, staff together who have good skills and can support each other may work, or again, you know, having some formal training could help as well.
Yeah. Do you find, you know I've seen some of this, and I'm wondering, because of what you guys do, if you've seen this. You know, when the recession hit, the companies fought just to keep the doors open, so their budget for training and development went away. And yet, as, you know, things started to recover and growth started to come back, those employees who managed to stay put and stay with the company all of a sudden became the next level of promotions. They moved themselves up. They hired underneath them. They may have been good at the job, but they didn't necessarily have the skills to lead. Now they're the supervisors and the managers of today. Now they're realizing, well, great, you were good at the job, but you didn't necessarily get the development to lead. Now we've got people leading that maybe don't know how to lead really well, and now they're doing kind of the catch-up of, oh, my gosh, we need to get you training. And so now we've got, and sometimes because of the generational gaps, you've got younger people coming in as the staff. So are you finding, tell me a little bit about what you're seeing from a little bit of the generational issues that can come up at work in the workforce today and how that can impact the engagement in the workplace.
Absolutely. Well, and Danny, you've described exactly what keeps happening in terms of people are great at the job, you promote them, and think they magically can get other people to do it as great as them, and now you took your best people off the line, off their task, and you put them in an uncomfortable and no confidence kind of situation because now they're failing at getting other people to do it, and they lost control of what they can control, which is themselves. So it is part of why we do have a generational issue, because the folks that are supervising these new people don't know how, and they need to be supervised differently than themselves. In other words, the sort of baby boomer kind of generation and a little bit of Gen X has this sense of loyalty to the company. And that is not the case anymore. It's starting to wither away, if you will, with the Gen Xers, which Deanna, you and I get to sit in that place comfortably. We're the forgotten
yes.
generation.
Yes, we are.
Right in the middle, no one cares about us kind of world. But yeah, I don't know if you've experienced this. I want a little bit of what millennials want. I want to make a difference. I want to have my own creativity. I want to be seen. I want to be a leader. I also totally live in the world of the baby boomer. I want loyalty to company. I want my company to thrive. It's like all boats rise with the rising tide or however that goes. I know if the company is better, the world is better, myself is better, my team is better kind of thing. So I want both as a Gen Xer.
I am a generational schizophrenic.
I think that's where we all live. Absolutely. So what has Gen X done? They've gone and tried to start their own companies. A lot of them do. What has baby boomers done? They've just sort of resigned themselves to, like, just get me through to the end type of thing. And then here's our millennials who are like, let me lead. And we're like, you're not ready. And you don't know what you're doing yet. So, but no one's going to teach you. And what they're really craving is that mentorship and that guidance. So one thing that can actually be very simple is for each other to teach each other, for the baby boomers to mentor and support and provide that understanding of the way the world works as in a mentor in a safe relationship, whether it's in the same company or even in another company, friends, family, whatnot. And then, of course, we can learn so much from the millennials, whether it's from a technology point of view or how to just kind of advocate for yourself. They may not be the best at it, but at least they have a deep desire, and they may fumble with it, but they're at least doing a good job of saying, this is what I want, and I'm going to go look for it.
Yes, yes. And they're creative. Their creativity, they are so great at thinking outside the box. It just blows my mind. Yeah, completely agree. Yeah, excellent. So how effective do you feel surveys are in a company or within a department or staff? You know, give us your feedback. You know, what are we doing well? What aren't we doing well? Blah, blah. Even if you make them anonymous, do you think they have any value?
Maybe. It really, actually, it's funny because it doesn't necessarily matter unless your culture is safe. And you're able to feel like you can speak the truth without having punishment. So it sort of goes back to that rewards and punishment. And so in that case, if you have an open door, very safe, very secure in your position that you can give honest feedback, you probably don't need a survey in the first place.
I was going to say, doesn't that sound like a good place where they're probably engaging them anyway?
Absolutely. And we see that. We see that. I do my best to have it in my company. I tell my people all the time, if I'm doing something wrong, please, I don't care if you have to slap me into senses, just tell me so I don't get caught in my own mistakes, because I'm still human and I can't always see what you see. However, I know I was laughing because I was thinking of a client who was, to an extent, arguing with me because he had all those evidence we talked about before with the complaints and the turnover, and they're not hitting their numbers. Their development numbers are in the can, in the pooper, whatever you want to say. And then he's like, yeah, but all of our surveys say we're great. And he kept going back to, yeah, but our surveys. And I have an open door policy and they can come and talk to me. He does, and he's great, but his management is scary as all heck. And so that culture, they don't feel safe, even though he's really safe. And so he had a disconnect from understanding, and there wasn't a place for people to tell him. He tried. He opened his door. He got the surveys. But until you really have it across culture, even the president of the company, which he was or is, was not able to really get that answer, and he was confused and wanted to argue with me, like, no, we're fine. I'm like, yeah, but you're not.
Yeah, I think I would have turned to him and said, well, why don't you take the surveys and go try to deposit those in the bank?
Yeah, exactly.
But, you know, I'm a little direct, so maybe that's a problem.
I might try that next time.
Yeah, there you go.
Talk to him.
Those don't deposit well, yeah. So, Jen, tell me, tell us a little bit about at the Institute, what kind of things, like if they wanted to get a taste of what the Institute does, do you guys do webinars, or I think you guys have like a radio interview or something that you do every month you and Brian are doing? Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, we have some great ways for people not only to get a taste, but to get some of this information out there for those who either can or can't afford some of that kind of support, mentorship, if you will. There's two ways that people can access some of these conversations and tips, and we're very action-oriented, so how-tos are extremely important in everything we do. How do you do this? Not just talk about it, but how do you do this? One way is, as Deanna was mentioning, we have kind of our own private radio show. It's less formal than this in terms of it being broadcast. So we do keep it as a safe space, and we call it the Professional Confessional. And it really is an opportunity to share what's working for you and what's not amongst staff and managers. And we present both sides. How does the staff see what the manager is doing wrong and vice versa? And then we also have on LinkedIn, we have our own group that people are welcome to join. If you search for Mastering Success, we have that same feel, but on an online format, people can share articles and ideas and issues. And we bring up a different topic twice a month that goes along with our radio show.
Awesome, 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 awesome. And if anybody would like to get in touch with you, follow up with any questions, and, you know, maybe ask a little bit more about the Institute, how can they reach you directly? What's the best way?
Sure. Obviously, going on to our website and finding our email and whatnot, instituteformasteringsuccess.com. I'm Jay Hamilton at instituteformasteringsuccess.com. And then I am happy and love to do a phone call so we can connect and have a wonderful conversation, 619-308-6898. I'm in extension 101, but if you just remember 619-308-6898, you'll find me.
Wonderful. Well, that is our show for today, and I want to say thank you again to our guest, Jen Hamilton, with the Institute for Mastering Success. Jen, thank you so much. This has been fabulous. I can't say how much I appreciate it any more than I already have.
You've just been wonderful. Thank you, Deanna. It's been great. Thank you.
Thank you, and I want to say a special thanks to all of our listeners, as we'll be back again next Monday morning for another Women Leading the Way radio show. We're here every Monday morning at 9 a.m. You don't want to miss it. And our leading lady next week will be Renee Zhao, CEO and co-founder of Donation Match, and the topic will be how to stay visible and charitable, too. You guys don't want to miss that. And again, I'm Deanna Potter, your petite powerhouse. I'm host of Sassy Sales and Business Development. I want to thank you for listening. Have a great week. And please remember to be profitable and prosperous. I wish you all a wonderful day. Thanks.
Women Leading the Way is produced by Connected Women of Influence, the premier private membership organization where like-focused business-to-business executive and professional women connect, collaborate, and cultivate a vast network of high-level affiliations, resources, and professional relationships. For more information about Connected Women of Influence, please visit our website at connectedwomenofinfluence.com.